Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, Katie Godden, and the team at The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. This week, we're discussing disabilities and learning. I'm delighted to welcome Justin Dorbermeyer to the podcast. Thank you for joining me, Justin. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Thank you, Katie, for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here. And I love learning and development. I am blind. I have a disability. That's why we're going to be talking about disability. I lost my eyesight at age 17 from type 1 diabetes. And this was back in 1988. I became a type 1 diabetic at age 5 in 1977. So I'm 51 years old now. And, you know, through my life, it's been challenging and rewarding. It's been a wonderful experience, strangely, to say I've lost my eyesight. It's caused me to grow in many ways from a very young age. So I went to university for a degree in computer programming. I graduated with that. And as I began to work in IT, I started training. I'm a natural trainer. I'm a natural coach. So I started writing courses and training people throughout IT in many different ways, in many different topics. And so from a very early start, I've been in IT for 23 years, and I've been a computer programmer and a learning and development leader throughout my entire career. I've held, you know, in one hand, it's like I'm a computer programmer, and in my other hand, I am a trainer and definitely into learning and development. So that's kind of been my career path. Recently, we had a large downsizing in the company I worked for here in America. And so I said, you know what, I'm just going to be learning and development because that's my passion. I've always loved learning and development way more than computer programming. So this is kind of the gist of my story.
So it sounds like you've got a clear passion for the learning and development side, even though you had your university degree in IT and you did programming. What led you to like the learning and development side of things?
In university, I actually was a social work major. So I was in social work for 2.5 years, and I love people. I love to support people. I love to work with people. I'm very passionate about that. So 2.5 years into my social work degree, my intention was to get a master's in counseling and continue in that. Unfortunately, the university I went to in the area I lived in America, there were no opportunities for blind social workers. It's a very small area. So if I lived in a larger area, say New York City or maybe Seattle, you know, something like that, there had been a lot of opportunity. So the social work dean of the department actually recommended that I would go into, you know, computer programming. And so I did. I went into that and graduated. So it's the love of people that have drawn me to learning and development. So IT typically, not so much now, but when I was in it, it was a very isolated career. Everyone stayed in their own cubicles and did their work and clocked out. And so this has been a wonderful opportunity for me to really work with people. And so that's really what kind of got me into learning and development. I'm like, I need to do something else besides grinding out code, debugging code, writing applications. Absolutely, completely unfulfilling and boring to me, strangely enough. So that was what did it for me. That's how I got into it.
So obviously, you said that you're blind. So did you have to adapt the way that you work to do the IT programming side of things?
The accommodations in my career have been minimal. I use screen reading software. You can Wikipedia that. It's just Wikipedia screen reader, and you could read all about it. So basically, it's just a computerized voice that reads everything on the screen to me that you see. So you're reading an email with your eyes. I'm listening to an email with my ears. You're writing source code with your eyes. I'm writing source code with my ears. So everything is just audibly read to me. So with regards to that accommodation, not much, but there are other accommodations that I've had throughout my career. So in learning and development, a lot of my training was in what's called domain-driven design, which is a software engineering methodology. And in that, it's very graphically oriented. So as I would instruct, I would have somebody sighted do the modeling for me. So as an example, I would say, let's put up a manager on the screen and make him a square. And now let's put an employee up on the screen and make them a circle. And let's connect those two together through a dotted line. And so someone sighted is doing this, and then they would just be like, done. And I'd be like, okay, now let's look at the manager. And so manager to employee, should it be a one-way relationship, a two-way relationship? Let's discuss that and just get feedback from everybody. And so then the model would just continue. So it was very team engaging. I love involvement from people. So, you know, I'm mostly guiding and facilitating and training at the same time. So accommodations were, like I said, in that scenario, helping graphically model things out. When I would do presentations, I still do presentations. PowerPoint slides, I would create them myself with the technology I use. So, you know, maybe the first slide's an intro paragraph, second slide's a couple bullet points, third slide, and so forth. That's very doable independently. But when it comes to putting in a graphic and sizing it, I would hit up the marketing department and say, hey, can you guys snazz this up a little bit? So giving them complete, you know, flexibility and creativity. So they would love it. They're very passionate about it. So those are the types of accommodations that, you know, I would reach out for as a learning and development leader.
That sounds great. And I think you touched on it before. You said about going into your social work initially, and actually there wasn't the requirement to have someone with a disability to be a social worker. What other challenges have you faced going through your career with programming and L&D?
I would say the most challenging thing that I've experienced really is the discrimination. You know, it's, for example, I interviewed for 2 years to get a job. And, you know, most people, I've been doing this for 23 years and I've worked for two companies. That pretty much says it all. You know, most people in computer programming or learning and development, let's just stick with computer programming as an example. You know, after 23 years, they've worked for probably a minimum of 10 companies. You know, it's very common in IT. You work for this company for 2 years, grab a set of skills, jump over to another company, work for 2 years, grab a set of skills, and so forth. So lots of, you know, career skill development by jumping around. So unfortunately, in my experience, it's not been good. You know, people have on their websites equal opportunity employers, you know, so they have everything written down perfectly to kind of be quote unquote politically correct. But at the end of the day, a lot of the employers ask themselves, why would I work with somebody that's blind and accommodate them when I could have someone sighted and not have to mess with that? So, you know, I'm going to pass on that. Now, excuse me, they don't say that to me, but understanding for me to interview with many, many companies, fully qualified, certifications, everything, references, and for 2 years for me to find an, you know, employment, pretty much says it all. So that's been the most challenging thing for me in my career. It's not been the actual work. It's not been working with the people. The companies that have worked with me have been wonderful because they see the benefit of working with somebody with a disability. Most people that work with a disability, and not all, by all means, not, I can't say this globally across the board for every single person with a disability, but most people with disabilities have very solid work ethics because they're grateful to have the work. And that is true for many people with disabilities. And so, as an example, I had someone, my supervisor was let go as well from this downsizing, restructuring with the company. And I had someone reach out to me on LinkedIn and said, I just spoke with your supervisor. And he said that you were the best employee he's ever had throughout his entire career. And that I would agree with that because the work ethic, the independence that I can work on my own, you know, no follow-up, no babysitting, no hand-holding, because I love the work. And a lot of people with disabilities have that. It just takes the right culture. It takes the right employer to look at someone with a disability and say, I see this as something positive. I don't see this as something restrictive or burdensome. You know, so the companies that I've worked for, and you can see them on LinkedIn, they've been wonderful. They have seen my disability as something successful, something as extremely inspiring, that somebody who's blind can go through university, can work successfully. They love it. And so it's very inspiring for a lot of people. And I have found that to be the case as a learning and development leader, you know, coaching and facilitating people, the human aspect of working with people has been tremendously beneficial to come into meetings, someone not seeing, you know, and people come to work, the grind of life outside of work, the difficult situations that they're facing, be it relationships, be it family, whatever. You know, they come to work and here comes Justin in blind with a very positive perspective on life. They draw great inspiration from that. So it's been a wonderful experience to work for the companies who have worked with me.
It's really inspiring listening to you actually start off with me asking about challenges and then you actually changing that into more of a positive light. So that's really inspirational to hear. How do you think in the learning and development industry we can better accommodate people with learning disabilities or disabilities?
That's a great question. Education, I think, is key. I think a lot of people that a lot of companies that I've interviewed with, they were uncomfortable because they've not had the education. They don't understand. You know, it's kind of like, what do you say to a blind person? How do you speak with them? You know, what if I say the wrong words? Like, did you see that movie? Or, you know, things like this. Or have you ever seen, you know? And in my specific case, I'm not sensitive like that at all. I always tell people I work with, don't change your wording because I'm blind. Talk to me just like you would a normal person. So a lot of my training in learning and development, outside of literally writing courses, I've written all kinds of courses and instructed them through the years, but also has been training people how to work with me because they honestly don't understand. A lot of times it would be, can I ask you a question? Absolutely. You know, my life's an open book. So even in meetings, I tell people, if you ever have questions about my blindness, about how I do what I do, even in my personal life, how does a blind person get dressed? How do I not walk out of the house in, you know, pink pants and a bright orange shirt? You know, how do we do that? You know? So I always encourage people. So that's been a lot of my training. So education. And when it comes to learning and development leaders, trainers, facilitators, instructional designers. You know, the Association for Training and Development Professionals, they have a course on how to create accessible content. And I would highly recommend that. I'm not being paid in any way, shape, or form for mentioning this. I came across it actually looking over their coursework because I was going to pick up a certification in learning management. And so I seen that. And I've actually invited Katie to include that, you know, as a link in the show notes. So I would highly recommend people who are in learning and development to take that course. It wasn't very expensive either. And it at least would begin to give you some education on how to accommodate people, you know, with, you know, disabilities. So that's a great resource to check into. And also, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I love connecting. I love teaching and training people. So if you have people that are working in your company that have a disability, or maybe you're an employer that has somebody that's applied with a disability and you have questions, contact me. I'll kindly teach and train and instruct you, you know, on how to work with someone with disability. But in short, they're just normal people, just like you. It's that simple. It's just that simple. Like, I'm a guitarist. I love to play guitar. I love to travel. I love to read books. You know, people don't understand how people with disabilities can function as quote unquote normal people in society. You know, I have people that honestly come to my home and walk in and say, you're not blind. There are people who literally do not believe that I'm blind because I don't wear glasses. You know, I don't act blind. I look at people in the eyes when I speak with them. So, you know, it's so possible for people to live a rich and rewarding life with a disability, be it blind, be it deaf, be it somebody that might be in a wheelchair. Technology helps a lot. So, you know, you got, you know, your iPhones and Android phones and all those have built-in screen readers. You know, turn them on and your screen will start talking to you and reading everything aloud to you. So I just wanted to encourage people to get educated, and you can read and Google, how do I interact with someone with a disability? There's all kinds of information out there. So feel free to research it. And again, if you have questions or if you simply want to connect just as a friend, awesome. You can find me on LinkedIn. And I think, Katie, you may include my LinkedIn profile link in the description. Is that correct?
Yep, I will do. I'll include all the links that you've mentioned.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad to help anybody out. So anyone interested listening, it's like, hey, this is kind of cool. I'd like to get some more information. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.
That's great, Justin. I think I've got one last question for you. Do you think we over-engineer the way that we create learning for people, whether it's people that haven't got disabilities and people that have got disabilities?
I'd like to flush this out with you, if we could play ping pong a little bit, because I Definitely. Know you're in this industry too. And I think personally, yes, absolutely, learning and development can be, you know, overprocessed. And same with software engineering, you know, learning the ADDIE model really is, you know, is what I did in software engineering. You assess, you design, you develop, you implement, you evaluate. I mean, that's writing software. I'm like, did these guys steal this from software engineering? I have no clue. But absolutely, you know, and it's interesting going through my career, the teams that I've worked with, we've always said collectively, we are not going to overprocess this, because it slows things down. You get so much red tape, quote unquote, red tape in place, you know, that the process slows down. At the end of the day, for me, I mean, I'm blind and doing learning and development. I'm writing courses, I'm instructing them. I'm aligning them with company goals, speaking with stakeholders, you know, in evaluating the effectiveness of it at the end. I was doing this and didn't even realize that learning and development had certifications. I was just doing this naturally because in software engineering, that's what I did. So I took those same skill sets of what's termed, you know, ADDIE, and, you know, was using them just naturally. It was smooth, it was effortless, it was easy and comfortable. So I absolutely think that, you know, like certifications are great. And I'm researching, picking up a couple now myself, just to kind of step through them and get them and throw them out on my LinkedIn profile. But at the end of the day, even in certifications, it could be so intellectualized that you lose the practical application of what you're doing, you know, and so, you know, it, you know, I came across a learning and development video training on LinkedIn, and it was extremely practical, and it was maybe like a 43-minute lesson on, you know, multiple lessons, but 43 minutes total, mm-hmm. that gave you the hardcore, you know, bottom line, what you need to do to be an effective learning and development leader. And it was wonderful in 43 minutes. And so then you look at certifications that take 3 months to get with so much information. I just read, I forget where this was, but I just read a statistic that, and please don't quote me on this, I'm pulling this out of memory, but roughly 40% of certification content is retained. 40%.
Yeah.
So, Katie, what do you think about this?
No, I completely agree. I think over the years, I've done lots of courses with it, whether that's in the role and I've had to kind of review courses or just taking them myself and working internally. And the amount of time is spent on actually learning the content that you need to know to go forward in your job role. I think that's minimal. I don't think you need to know all of the information that these courses necessarily provide. I think the actual engineering of the courses themselves, they're not accessible and they're over-engineered. What I mean by that is that they'll have lots of functionality and it's like the designer's gone, oh, we can do this in this program, let's add everything in, and actually it wastes the learner's time. And I find that a lot is unnecessary. And I think that's what I wanted to try and link back to you with the accessibility part, because if you were going through, would your screen reader be able to read that? And would you be able to access the same content? Would you have the same experience that I would be? So like, is that engineering in this training really, really necessary?
Yeah, an analogy might be, you know, on a mobile device, you know, I want to send a text message, you know, it's simple, tap on message, type it out and hit send.
Yeah.
But that can be over engineered.
Yeah.
To the place where, okay, class, today we're going to be talking about text messages. What is a text message? You know, and step through the history of when did text messages get started? And, you know, what is a text message? Now let's talk about the four benefits of text messages compared to email. Now, you know, and on and on it goes, of regurgitation of all of this data, when simply put, okay, guys, tap on message, tap on the contact, type what you want, hit send, done.
Yeah.
I
think that comes back to the audience as well. So it's understanding your audience. So if you're talking to people and like your example, we just want to know how to send a text message. We don't need to know all that background information. In some instances, you might need to know that. And I appreciate that. But I think it's adapting that content However that's delivered, whether it's online or whether that's in the classroom, but it's adapting that to your audience and making it as quick and accessible and as easy as possible, rather than taking away from that key point of just hit the text message and then hit whatever you need to hit to get the text message out and then hit send. You know, I think that's what we sometimes miss in learning and development, and we add in all the extra bits because we feel that we need it, but do we generally need that? And is that the purpose of why we're delivering the training? I think everything should always come back to that.
I think that's a great call out, like tailoring the, you know, content of the training, you know, to the actual audience. And that kind of goes back to where I thrive and love, and that's those people skills, you know, getting with people, talking to them. Not like walking in with a clipboard and a pen and I'm going to interview you.
Yeah.
but literally, hey man, I'm just a normal person like you. Let's talk. You know, sit down with a cup of coffee and begin to assess what is it, man? What's the pain points for you here? You know, and so forth. But great call out, you know, tailoring that training and being, you know, and I think for me personally during my training, I've always lean more toward keeping it very simple and not over-engineered, because as a software developer, I've seen what over-engineering looks like, and I felt the pain of having to work in a model that's been over-engineered. So I have always been thin, you know, for any people that's been in IT, you know, I've trained and coached and built teams around the agile methodology where we're lean, we're thin, you know, we're going to keep things tight. And that's kind of how I've been with training, you know, is to keep things narrowed down to what's essential for someone to achieve what the company wants and to get it done. And sometimes that means working more closely with people as a coach, you know, as a mentor, building them up, training them. And, you know, outside of the written content, you know, and the instructional design and all of that, it comes back to how much are you willing to work with people? Because, you know, if you put someone through a learning content management system with video training, which is great, you know, it depends back to your point, Katie, of the audience, right? So, you know, but after they've went through that training of the video and everything, and they have the knowledge, are you going to coach them? I just seen a post recently about coaching, you know, is coaching applicable to learning and development? And I'm nodding my head yes, as I'm reading this person's post, and I liked it. I don't remember if I commented on it, but it is, you know, spending that quality time training, coaching, and inspiring people is just as important to me personally as to developing the design, the instruction, and training that out. So
I definitely think we're on the same page with that, Justin, but I think we could talk for hours, I think, on this topic, but we'll come to an end with it. I know you've mentioned how people can get in contact with you. So is it on LinkedIn? And we'll put that in the show notes below.
Yes, LinkedIn would be the best way to connect with me. And for those listening right now, currently, I am open to new opportunities. Hashtag O&O, my company Downsize that I work for. So I'm in the market now. So if you're listening and you do have an opening and would be interested in exploring some potential, then feel free to reach out for that too. But definitely LinkedIn is the best way to get in contact with me. And there's probably more than one Justin Dobenmeyer out there by all means, but I might only be the only learning and development, and follow the link in the description and you'll find me.
Thank you very much again, Justin, for joining me. And yeah, we'll put all the links in the show notes below.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if The Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.